Hello everybody and welcome to the War Room. This one is for the UFC 273 main event for the featherweight title. Alexander Volkanovski defending his belt against one of the fan favourites, the Korean Zombie. Okay, so I've done a breakdown show on this already. It's very extensive. If you want to go and watch that, there'll be a lot more video detail in that one. I'm going to talk, obviously we're closer to the fight now. I've digested the breakdowns a bit and I've watched a few more fights and I'm still really fascinated with this one. The way that my head is leaning right now is that Volkanovski can do what he's done to his last 20 opponents. I mean, a 20 fight win streak is unreal, and his only loss is at welterweight. We have to bear that in mind as well. The guy's a real handful. He's moved down weight classes to the point where he's found his right spot, but he still fights like he's a welterweight or a middleweight. You know, he's got strength and power. You know, for five rounds, he doesn't run out of either. He doesn't have the same kind of one-punch power as the Zombie, but the volume does make a big difference, and it does break his opponents down. My concern for the Korean Zombie in this one is that he's very hittable. He's very stationary, he's very hittable, and he does tend to follow his opponents around. He doesn't have bad footwork, you know, pushing people up against the fence, but if you think back to the Brian Ortega fight, although he was the one pressuring forward, he wasn't the one leading the dance. And at no point in this fight is Volkanovski going to hold still. You know, we think back to the Aldo fight or to the Holloway fights, and if you try and imagine Volkanovski from his opponent's perspective, he is constantly moving back and forth, side to side, and the space between you seems like it gets a little bit bigger and a little bit shorter. And he's feinting, and his head's shifting off one side then the other, and he's feint. I mean, there's just so much going on. He's level changing. You never know when he's going to try for a takedown as well. You never know when he's dipping to come over the top with big power punches. So he's a really difficult individual to read because he's in constant motion. The Korean Zombie's not in constant motion. He's very much a patient, wait for you to come to me kind of fighter. Now, he can be aggressive, and he does have bursts where he flurries and runs at people, flying knees and stuff. But generally, what we're going to see in this fight, in my opinion, is something similar to what he did against Dan Ige, where he's kind of walks and chops and walks and chops and tries to counter his punches as he's coming in. It's going to be very difficult to do that against Volkanovski because it's... like I said, it's difficult to read him. He's very quick, and he uses a real variety of techniques to start cutting his opponents down. Korean Zombie, on the other hand, if he can get into that stage of the fight where he's waiting for Volkanovski to step in, and now Volkanovski's timid because he's been hit a couple of times, that's when the Korean Zombie can start finding those lovely counter punches that come up and around the sides of Volkanovski's attack. The ground game is a whole different thing entirely, which I'll get into. Let's start with the tail of the tape. So, 23-1 for Volkanovski again. You know, 20 fight win streak, one losses at welterweight. So he's an undefeated featherweight. Korean Zombie is on a 1-5 win streak. 17-6 is his record, and he's kind of had a career of two halves. Like we remember him coming through WEC. Signing with the UFC and then working his way up to a title shot against Jose Aldo. Didn't work out well for him that night, dislocated his shoulder in the process, and then he disappeared for a couple of years for military service. And then when he came back, he came back onto the scene with that knockout over Dennis Bermudez, which was a thing of beauty. But it's a risky style, the one that the Korean Zombie uses, because he is hittable, he knows he can be hit and he can still keep fighting. And... because a lot of the guys that he's fighting are a lot more fleet-footed and mobile than he is. Like, his thing is that he can stand in the pocket and take risks that other fighters wouldn't, and he does have the punching power to trade as well as what seems to be, you know, a hell of a chin. But fights can slip away from him. He can be eaten up by someone like Volkanovski, who isn't going to overcommit to anything. So we've got an inch in height and an inch in reach for the Korean Zombie. Which will be useful, I would imagine. He's going to look like the more imposing individual in there, but he's also going to look slower. There's no doubt about it. You know, Volkanovski's going to be utilizing that window of space in front of the Korean Zombie to constantly be changing his line of attack, which means that every time Zombie settles to try and counter something, he's going to have to reset and face another direction or block something and then turn and face. And that constant cycle that he's going to get caught in, it might be difficult for him to overcome. As far as the stats go, Takedown offense for the Korean Zombies is a big thing for me. You can see that sitting at 77%. He's actually got better grappling stats than Volkanovski. But the reason why Volkanovski is able to ground people is usually because he throws such volume at them. And because he's constantly dipping and level changing, line changing, you don't know whether he's coming over the top or around the side with punches or he's level changing to come underneath. So he's effective with his takedowns, especially against the fence, because there's that confusion with his opponents who are already now backed up and under pressure. I suppose this is why I find this fight interesting, because if you've got, say, you know, if you've got Lyoto Machida on one side and Wanderlei Silva on the other, you can picture how that fight's going to go. There's going to be no confusion that Lyoto Machida's going to move around and counter-strike and Wanderlei Silva's going to come marching forward Muay Thai style and try and bulldoze him. But sometimes we have fighters that occupy the same space. Like, for example, sometimes you'll get two guys that are really strong wrestlers, so then we end up having a kickboxing match. Or two guys that are really good kickboxers, and then one of them decides they're going to take the fight to the ground and use their ground skills. With this one, they both occupy that space where they are forcing their opponent back up against the fence. So we know that inside octagon that's drawn on the canvas. They're both standing right on top of that, or right in front of that, forcing their opponent in between them and the fence. They do it for different reasons, but because they occupy the same space, one of them is going to have to win that exchange. Now, Volkanovski is quite happy to move and chop and counter, but he only does that to the point where he can start then pushing them back against the fence. And if he can't ever push them back against the fence, then that's the game plan he'll stick to. With the Korean Zombie, he can't help but walk forward. He likes to march people down heavy on the lead leg, but he wants them backed up against the fence so he can force them to feel pressured and do something. Throw a jab, throw a right hand, level change, whatever it is. He likes to pressure them to make them do something so he can then work his counters. So they're both going to be battling for that same space. Now, if we have a look at Volkanovski to start with, what I want to just touch on are these low kicks. Because this is, of course, going to be a key against the Korean Zombie, who stands really heavy on his lead leg, and obviously really heavy on his lead leg. Part of the reason why his weight's so heavy on his lead leg is because he's offering his head as a target to strike. You know, we see fighters that are confident in their counter-striking and their punching power doing this. Korean Zombie's a really good example. He kind of hangs his head out to try and get his opponent to attack so he can counter, and I'll show you a good example of why in a moment. But that does leave that lead leg very vulnerable. Now, he can, of course, trade low kicks with punches, but because of the targeting of Volkanovski, you can't take many of these punches, which means you don't get many opportunities to trade before the trade has already worked out poorly. So what we're going to see here is Volkanovski is going to be targeting this calf. He's going to be targeting a nerve that runs down the outside of the leg, which is the thing that most people are aiming for. They're aiming for this nerve that with one or two kicks directly to it can deaden and can completely disable the lower foot. You know, you think back to DJ against Henry Cejudo. First round, Henry Cejudo, his lead leg was wrecked. He could barely pick it up. He was dragging his toes along the canvas. And you'll see as Volkanovski attacks this, it's quite clear how he's attacking it. Like, even with Max Holloway lifting it up, you can see how that shin bites into the muscle on the outside. And you'll also notice that he's not coming down with the technique. The technique's actually coming up into the leg, which means that the shin bone, which is on the outside of the leg, is digging into that muscle. So you're getting a hard bone that's impacting a soft bit of tissue that's not really doing a very good job of protecting the nerve that runs underneath it. And this was consistent. You know, he moves away, and each time he does it, you can see it either destabilizes Max Holloway's base, or it makes him timid to put his weight back on that foot. Here it is again. Bang. Hard and really nicely targeted. And look how the shin bone is turned into the leg. Chop and then move. And these from two different fights. Hard chop. I mean, it's the targeting is very, very specific. And now these two clips are from the first Max Holloway fight. If you watch the second one, you'll notice he's working the inside leg as well. And you'll sometimes see him go double inside low kick, move around, outside low kick, inside low kick, outside low kick. So then he's working both targets. If he's working the outside leg, he's working that the calf muscle. If he's working the inside leg, he's going for the inside thigh, which does... It's not nearly as effective as the calf kick from what we can tell, but it does make people very laboured stepping onto that lead leg. So this then plays into the second part of Korean Zombie's game, because in order for him to land his power punches, he needs his weight planted on that lead foot. He needs to be able to throw over the top and around the sides. Even an uppercut, he needs to post on that rear leg for the counter. So by damaging that lead leg, it's gonna make Volkanovski's life a lot easier. It's going to make a rather stationary target a lot more stationary. And it's going to make his punching power a lot less of a weapon, because it's going to be slower to be delivered and it's going to be slower to retract, which means that if Volkanovski decides he wants to counter or level change, it's going to make his life easier. So that's a big key for Volkanovski, and he will move around. He'll be back and forth around this space here, and what we're going to see the Korean Zombie is he'll follow him. He'll go this way, and then he'll cut him across, and then he'll cut him across, and he'll try and sweep him up against the fence. But it's going to be so difficult to do with Volkanovski, especially because every time you step onto that lead leg, he hammers that calf and does damage. So here we go. So moving on to the Korean Zombie. And this is my new favorite knockout, the Korean Zombie. This is ideal for him. You can see him stalking. He's dominating this octagon space here. So he always wants his opponent pushed back over this line. That's his goal. Because if he can keep them sandwiched between that small space there, then he knows that they've only got three options. They're either going to go left, right, or level change. And he's got options for counters for all of them. Now, against Dennis Bermudez, as he was pushing him back up against the fence, Bermudez was trying to hold him off with a jab. But as you can see, he's not really fully committing to the jab. He's reaching it out there and then pulling himself back away because he's expecting counters. He may well have been expecting that Moicano counter coming over the top, because Zombie did threaten it a couple of times. But it's also worth noting at this point, Dennis Bermudez's takedowns had been discouraged. Zombie had tried to take him down a couple of times. The first time he ran him all the way across the other side of the fence and stuffed it up against the fence, turned him off. The second time he threatened a guillotine and Bermudez just bailed on it. So this is now Dennis Bermudez, now only with two options, is left or right. If I go forward with a level change, my takedown's being defended and potentially threatened. So if I keep moving side to side, at least I can hold him off and maybe pick at him as he's coming towards me. Again, this is where Volkanovski's low kicks come in, because Dennis Bermudez doesn't really use him. Like, you can see him, he throws that jab and he backs up and he goes again with the same technique. So he throws a jab. You see Korean Zombie just pull himself out of the way of it. Never blinks his eyes either. I mean, he's just not bothered about getting punched in the face. It's one of the reasons we love him. But we see Bermudez circle and he throws the same punch again. Now, what you're going to notice is as this punch comes out towards the face of Korean Zombie, Zombie's going to dip his head over towards the side, and he's going to let that punch drift over his shoulder. There's the jab coming out, and then you can see the Korean Zombie dipping. And as he dips, the punch goes over his shoulder, so his head's safe. Instead of his head being here, he's now moved it over to the other side, which then puts him inside of the punching range of someone that he's already got a longer reach than. Same thing with Volkanovski. And we can also see this uppercut here is now being postured to come up that center channel and crack him on the chin. It's a really nice technique to use, very risky, something I wasn't very good at, because I was never very good at slipping my head off to that side and coming up the center channel. You have to be very confident in your timing to do it. You can see here as he's slipping, he's already initiating the punch. You can see how his arms drop and you see his elbow coming out the backside here. But the reason why he was confident in that is because he just got the read here. Like, he's slipping away, but he's seeing that target. That's Dennis Bermudez's chin right there. He's seeing that target's available for him to drop this hand, which is here currently, to drop it and come up and catch him with the uppercut. So the only danger is making sure that his head's in a safe place at the same time. But we go from jab, slip, circle, jab, counter. Lovely. And that could be Dennis Bermudez jabbing to level change and level changing straight onto an uppercut. Another, you know, danger with the Korean Zombie, who's also got great knees up the center line as well. Like, there are a few things that Korean Zombie can throw into the mix. Here's another shot of it. There are a few things that Korean Zombie can throw into the mix here that will close doors for Volkanovski. The center channel attacks, the uppercuts, the rising knees, etc., are going to be a big key for him. Also, the neck attacks if Volkanovski's level changing off the fence. But this is where I feel like if Volkanovski's backed up against the fence, he's most likely not going to be trying to take him down. Most likely he's going to be on the toes and trying to find space. If he's got Korean Zombie backed up against the fence, that might be where he's trying to look at taking him down. But still a very risky thing to do, and still the uppercut is an option. Look at that. Slips off to the side, straight up the center channel, and punched him across his chin as well. What a lovely knockout that is. You know, and we saw a similar thing with Moicano when he slipped to the outside of the jab and came over the top. You know, the key point to remember here is any time Volkanovski opens up by stepping forward to strike, he's vulnerable to getting countered. I think the low kicks are a slightly safer channel for him to go, but still he can't be doing it without setting them up too much, because he will be forced to pay for it. But, you know, two or three and that changes the fight entirely. So if Volkanovski's got the fight in his range, that it's here, as you can see, with Darren Elkins backed up against the fence, where he can do that dip level change and people don't know whether they need to lower their hands to get underhooks or keep their hands up to defend an overhand right. And what you'll see here is you'll see Volkanovski dip hard and then throws a power right hand over the top. Look how low he dips and rolls afterwards. Like, this is the danger being backed up against the fence with Volkanovski, because although this was a big power punch that Darren Elkins was able to take quite well, usually, and the Chad Mendes fight is a good example, usually people are backed up against the fence and they've taken a jab and a body hook and a low kick and a cross and a front kick to the body and then a hook again and then a cross and a hook and a low kick, and they get that, oh, I can't take any more. You know, he wears them and breaks them down. And then if he starts adding in level changes as well, of course that's a different thing entirely. That adds a whole new level of attack that you've got to be comprehending. Now, this right hand over the top here was beautiful. And he really is confident in throwing these right hands as soon as he's got someone backed up against the fence, as a way of interjecting a power shot into a pick and touch and move game. He will really step on the gas and throw this big power shot. And you can see here against Elkins, I mean, it drops him and puts him on the canvas. And immediately Volkanovski, was hand on the back of the head, starts to strike and then attacks the neck. Now, I'm not saying that he can't drop the Korean Zombie. I think it's going to be difficult for him to knock the Korean Zombie out cold. For the shots that Korean Zombie's taken, I don't know if Volkanovski's got the power to one-punch knock him out like this. Not a home run shot. I think if he wears him down and he's done damage and he's you know, fatigued Chan Sung-jun, then absolutely that's a possibility. But from the very first round, this is a possibility for Korean Zombie. That's why Volkanovski's got to be cautious with his footwork and with these engagement choices. Because, you know, you think back to the Mark Hominick fight. I think that was 6 seconds. Hominick comes out, bounds into range, throws a long hook, and Korean Zombie just drops back, pings him with one shot. Like, he has that power. And I think that's why he's always willing to stand in the pocket and trade. Like, now, even in this scenario, and this was the second time he'd landed this clean right hand on Elkins, even in this scenario, Elkins was fighting back. So if we imagine for a moment that he drops Korean Zombie up against the fence, but he's not able to finish him with that big shot, what we tend to find is he has a really good... Here's the replay. What we tend to find, he has a really good top game ground and pound. Look at the intention in that shot. Pow, right over the top. Now, one thing I will say, and I have watched this knockout over and over again, and I have compared it to the Korean Zombie's knockout over Moicano, knockout, knockdown. That was a TKO finish. The follow-through on the punches is very different as well. Like, the Korean Zombie's head wasn't nearly off the center line as much. The Korean Zombie's head, when he knocked out Moicano, was kind of here, which means that this arm, instead of being so curved... And the issue with this is the trajectory of the fist is it kind of comes over like this. It kind of glances the chin of Darren Elkins. Whereas if you watch Korean Zombie against Moicano, he punches through his chin. He's right inside the pocket, which means he makes beautiful connection with the punches. A lot of Volkanovski's punches are kind of skimming, and that might be one of the reasons why he's losing a bit of power in them. But still, you know, having said that, he catches Elkins beautifully here. And if Elkins wasn't so damn tough, that might have been the end of him. But he gets dropped against the fence, and then this puts us in a very, very familiar position for Volkanovski. You can see he's already posting down with his left hand onto the back of Elkins's head to keep his posture broken. But then if we skip into this next fight against Kasuya, which was Volkanovski's debut, this was just power shots from the top. And at no point is he gripping and holding onto his opponent to control them. What Volkanovski doesn't want to do is get into a grappling exchange with the Korean Zombie, because I would say Zombie's jiu-jitsu skills are better. I would say Volkanovski's got better top game ground and pound, MMA-based wrestling. And this is very old school style. But you can see with his half guard, he's not, like, if anything, Kasuya's controlling him with this leg that's hooked, and then he's got a knee shield across the belly line to try and keep him off, as well as having his guard up. So the effort here is not only is trying to control Volkanovski from completely passing, but also trying to hold him off so he's not putting all this power into shots. And what Volkanovski does so well is he strikes and then posts, and then strikes and then posts. And so he's always conscious of not only creating space, but also forcing his weight onto his opponent. So they're basically propping him up as he's then unloading big power shots. Like you can see here, big shot comes down, drops all of his body weight into these shots. And as soon as the range closes down like it does there, and there's a risk to getting swept or his opponent escaping, you see this palm on the face, and then he props his whole body up behind it. So that force all goes down into his opponent. So now Kasuya went from taking a big shot that he was able to get around. I mean, that just glanced off the side of his head there. Palm in the face. Posture, and then another big elbow comes down on top. There's no point, there's no opportunity for him to escape because there's nothing to grab onto. At the point where Volkanovski's, so this is the level of his spine right now. At the point where the level of his spine drops down to here, and there's an option for Kasuya to get an underhook, he's already getting his face posted on and getting himself pried away, ready for the next punch. And so this oppressive style that Volkanovski has against the fence might be a real benefit to him if he's able to put the Korean Zombie here and hold him for any particular amount of time. But it's all about disengaging grappling, posting and striking, and not playing jiu-jitsu with the Korean Zombie. Like anything like this for Volkanovski would be ideal, but with the takedown defense of the Korean Zombie, it's going to be difficult to put him there. It's going to be difficult to hold him there. And this again is about which direction are these guys facing. Is Volkanovski facing out into the octagon where he has to shoot and drive all the way to the other side to get the Korean Zombie up against the fence? Or is he able to dominate the center so he can comfortably shoot into the fence against the Korean Zombie? On the flip side, if Korean Zombie's backed up against the fence, he's going to be throwing uppercuts and trying to stuff the takedown against the fence. But if he's out in the open, he has way more space behind him, which means that you're going to see more risk-taking. He's going to be doing more neck attacks. He's going to be trying flying knees and stuff because there's the space behind him. He can take those risks. Can't do it quite as much up against the fence. So the most important thing for me to be watching from the get-go of this fight is who controls the center. And what I expect is for Volkanovski to allow the Korean Zombie to hold the center while he batters his lead leg. Then he'll start pushing him back when the Korean Zombie can't follow him quite as much. There's one other thing that we have to discuss, though, is, of course, if this fight does hit the floor, you know, what does the Korean Zombie have to offer? And if he's tired and he's smashed up against the fence, he might not have a great deal to offer. That might be a really, really dominant position for Volkanovski to anti-jiu-jitsu and ground and pound. But if Korean Zombie is leading the dance and he has got Volkanovski backed up against the fence and Volkanovski is level changing, or there is a panic moment where Korean Zombie comes crashing forward with some wild techniques and Volkanovski does level change, what's he running onto? I mean, he's running onto knees, he's running onto that beautiful uppercut that we've seen from the Korean Zombie, and also a bunch of neck attacks. Now, there's the Twister breakdown on the BT Sport channel. Go and check that out. He is the first fighter to get a Twister submission in the UFC. So, you know, that's a big statement in itself, because it's not an easy submission to get. But he has also got all the basics as well. And he is also a very, very strong individual physically. You can see that by the way that he manhandles some of his opponents. But this fight against Dustin Poirier is the one that stands out to me, because you see little bits of all the things that I've talked about. So you see big uppercut lands, beautiful. Knocks his opponent back up against the fence. And then what comes next? Of course it's a flying knee, because why not? Because why not? Because you've got all of the space behind you to defend into. So he goes flying knee. And he tries to build a frame here. Now, what he's trying to do is he's trying to build a frame there so his opponent can't level change. But of course, Dustin Poirier, he's quick on the level change and he's also under pressure. So he drops and he drives in. But this is what I'm talking about with the space behind the Korean Zombie. Because look where that line is. So you're looking at what? I don't know, 8 feet of space there, which leaves, you tell me, it depends on the size of the octagon. 22 feet behind him, maybe, depending on the size. There's a lot of space for him to play with. So Dustin Poirier has to really drive a long way across the octagon to get, you know, to get him driven up against the fence, or even, especially with the sprawl the fastest Zombie's got, to get his hands on his legs. And as soon as they land in this position, Zombie switches his grip. He locks up a Darce choke position. So now the right arm is underneath the armpit of Dustin Poirier and under the neck, and then it's in the bicep of his left arm, and you can see the left hand here hooking around the back of the tricep. And that gives him some amount of control for a moment while he tightens that grip up. Dustin Poirier reaching for this hip here, because he just got his fingertips on it, and what you'll see is the Korean Zombie just do a little shake, drop that off, and then circle round. That also allows him to tighten this grip up as well. You can see what he's doing with his fingers here. You can see the fingers flare and he just gets a deeper bite on his arm. So he's gone from a little bit of a bicep grip to now he's right around the side of his tricep. He's got a good control on there. And as he bumps Dustin Poirier over, drives him down, lifting up with the right arm underneath the armpit. Where are we? Drives him down. And that is tightening up as he's falling to his side. So as Dustin Poirier's hip hits the floor, the Korean Zombie drops his weight on. And he's asleep very quickly. It just shows you how strong and how tight this squeeze is. I think part of the reason is because he was able to get the grip before he bumped him over. And most of the time people will get a vice grip to put their opponent on their side and then cinch up a Darce choke. But this was lovely. I mean, it's just a really nice finish. And again, you know, it goes back to that first round. So they're playing with that control of the center. If Korean Zombie's there, we're going to see flying knees and we're going to see counter punches and we're going to see neck attacks. If Volkanovski's there, we're going to see feinting and overhand and volume punches and level changes. If Volkanovski's got him up against the fence on the floor, he's going to be working anti-jiu-jitsu and ground and pound. If Volkanovski shooting off the fence and he's shooting out of panic or under pressure, then we're going to see the Korean Zombie either defend those, set him up with counters, or look for some submissions on the end. I think this is a really interesting one, to honest, and I think I say that every episode, but there's so many things about this fight that are interesting, because they're both excellent fighters, but they're both very, very different. They have a different approach. They have a different intention with the outcome of this. Volkanovski's quite happy to outpoint you the distance. Korean Zombie comes in all the time to try and stop you. What else haven't I said? I mean, it's going to be a great fight. Make sure you give us a like and a subscribe. I never say that. I always forget. But it does help us. And leave us a comment as well. I'd like to know who you're thinking is going to win the fight before it starts. I think it's going to be difficult to get that belt off Volkanovski. But Korean Zombie's got that one-shot fight-changing power. And those crazy abilities that he can pull out the bag when he is under pressure. So it does make it very difficult and dangerous for Volkanovski all the way through the fight. Should be a good one. I'll see you next time.